This is the Special Needs Connection with your hosts, Randy Van Ness and Annette Zarate from the Skills Academy Vocational Center, your community resource to help the families get the skills they need to build a brighter future.
Good morning. You're listening to Special Needs Connection. I'm Randy Van Ness, your host. I'm from Skills Academy Vocational Center. Today we have Tasha Noble from Southeast Special Olympics. We're going to talk to her about what Special Olympics is, how you get involved with Special Olympics, and all the wonderful things they do. So Tasha, please say hi to my listeners.
Hello, good morning everyone.
Give us a good overview of Special Olympics.
Special Olympics Colorado works with athletes with intellectual and developmental disabilities of all ages. We start at age 2 and there is no age limit. You can stay in Special Olympics for your entire life.
So tell me a little bit about the different sports you operate in this region.
Within Colorado, we offer 22 different sports throughout 4 seasons. We have winter, spring, summer, and fall. Throughout those 4 seasons, those 22 sports are broken up, and we offer about 5 to 6 per season.
What's your most popular sport by season?
By season, we'll start with winter, which is basketball. Spring, which is a mix between swimming and track and field. Summer, softball.
Always my son's too. Again, my son Brian is a star pitcher in softball.
Mm-hmm. And finally, fall, our biggest sport across the nation, bowling.
Yeah, I bet that is just so many people love bowling and in the first place, and it's a sport everybody can participate in.
Yes, yes. We have athletes from that age 2 for our young athletes all the way up to our elderly, and also athletes who need assisted devices to bowl. We offer that for them as well.
Is that like the ramps they can drop balls down and pads?
Yes, ramps as well as unified partners. You can have a typical developing individual partner with an athlete, and they can help that athlete push the ball off the ramp. Essentially, still being that athlete participating, but helping them along in the ways that they need.
What a great thing, especially the unified partners. Can you touch on what a unified partner is a little?
Yes, a unified partner is a typical developing individual who loves sport, has a love for helping others, and they partner with a specific athlete or team to help them along the way in the sports that they want to participate in. So it might be a peer partner, just helping, coaching them along the way, or it might be someone who helps one of our athletes that has limited mobility, limited range of motion, all of those things that just need an extra set of hands.
I love during track and field how you have the guys doing cycling, and they'll have a special needs person who might have cerebral palsy, might have other developmental delays, riding on the front, helping them pedal if they can, and they're steering the bike around the track. I love that, the visual of that, showing that anybody can do that. The track and field when people are being pushed in the cart, I mean, that just, it really shows everybody is accepted no matter what the disability. And I love that you guys adapt like that. Your peer partners, are they usually family members who want to help with the family? Or do you get cadets? What do you do for get peer partners?
Peer partners are open to anybody in the community. It could be family members. It could be individuals from schools that just want to be involved. And it could be someone just like you and me, who we have a love of sports. We have a love to help people. And you just reach out to me, and I help get you connected with the sport and the team that interests you.
I want to give one quick story on being a peer partner. We have a gentleman in our school who really wanted to play football because all the other guys were playing football and we were coaching the team, the Thunder. And he really wanted to play, but he uses a walker, and you can't have walkers on the field. So I became his peer partner, running him up and down the field, him holding onto my arm and running where the plays are, and him grabbing flags. And it was the most wonderful thing because he has severe cerebral palsy and has to use a walker. And he was able to play just like everybody else. he was able to have that joy. And we let our guys, we bought them all their football jerseys so they could keep them when season ended with their nicknames on the back. Mm-hmm. And his was Elway. And he got to be Elway for those few minutes running up and down the field. He got to have that same joy all that all the other athletes got to have. And that is so fun. So talk to me about your youngest and your oldest athlete right now.
Right now, our youngest athletes are those age two. So some parents are just finding out at this age that their child has an intellectual disability. And we want to connect with them sooner rather than later to offer them those gross motor skills, working on foundational sports skills, hitting, kicking, throwing, catching, so that when they turn eight, they can move over into the competitive aspect that you were talking about earlier. Our oldest athlete, I believe, is in their 70s and still does those really popular sports, bocce, bowling, all of the things that don't require a lot of movement, but it's still a workout for them mentally and also gets them out working with their community.
What a great way to keep people moving. As you know, type 2 diabetes is so rampant in the special needs community. So doing anything like that for the older ages, it's great. I know one of the other programs you have that really gets people moving is the Fitness Captain program. Can you tell us a little bit about Fitness Captains?
Yes, just last year, we really started to ramp up this new program, Fitness Captains, where each team has an individual, an athlete that stands out as a leader, someone who can motivate the team to get up, get moving, stay active, eat healthy, drink plenty of water, and keep that motivation going, not just at practice, but also outside of practice as well. So this person checks in with our healthy standpoints up in our state office. They are constantly educating themselves on how to remain active and what they can be doing to enhance their team's fitness.
Which is so wonderful. What other things do the fitness captains do?
This is an opportunity for them to really grow as a leader. So athletes who want to step outside of a comfort zone of just essentially being a sheep, they can step outside, really work on vocalizing themselves to their community and to their teams. And it almost branches off into the other leadership opportunities that we have within Special Olympics.
What are those?
So that would be the Athlete Input Council, having a voice with what we do here in Special Olympics, being a part of the games organizing committees right here in our own regions, you know, putting in their voices on what they'd like to see at these competitions. This is for them, so I like to hear from them to make sure that we are just making the most out of the day.
What a great way to empower people. Put them on the committees, let them help organize their games. Mm-hmm. It's such an important thing because we tend to ignore that. Oh, we'll get it for you. We'll organize it for you. I'm super mom. I can do it all. But getting our athletes buy-in, getting them organizing, what a great way to do that. It really gets them all moving. Another thing we talk about here is we talk about sports, but I know Special Olympics is much more than just sports. What are some of the other things that Special Olympics helps our athletes do?
We are really big into connections. We don't want our athletes to stay within their bubbles. We want them to step outside of those boundaries, make new friends, make new connections within the community so people not only learn more about what it is that makes them passionate, but who they are as people. We really want them to know that we encourage them to grow, to learn, to go to school, to travel. There's opportunities for that through our ALPS universities where athletes partner with someone like you or me, a typical developing individual who is a mentor, and they talk to them about public speaking, about stepping outside of those boundaries, about working on goals for themselves, whether it be educationally or occupationally.
And I love the health aspect of what Special Olympics does. When we go to these tournaments, it's not just sports. You have doctors and everything. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Those are volunteer physicians and doctors within certain specialties. Think podiatry, dentistry, things like that. These physicians are called our clinical directors. They go through a very rampant training to learn how to give aid to our athletes and really focus in on what they need. So part of being in Special Olympics is doing an athlete application. That requires a physical examination from your doctor so that we know what about our athletes, what is okay for them to do, what we need to steer away from for some of our athletes, as well as any medications or diagnosis that we just need to know in case of emergencies. That is also, that's really hard for our athletes to get in there and do sometimes, especially if it's not around their yearly exams. What we like to do is bring in these volunteer physicians and they conduct these exams on the spot for free.
What a great idea. I know when we went up to Fort Collins for football, our guys went through a podiatry check, a dental check. They went through an eye check, and they went through a physical check. It's so much more than sports, what you guys are doing. And then tell me a little more about the screening, wellness screening you guys are doing.
So we really try to have almost like an Olympics of medical opportunities. We want, when someone comes in, we want them to be head to toe checked out and receive the clearance that we require to participate. So that could be vision, ears, that physical examination of overall, as well as podiatry. You know, we offer free shoes to our athletes for certain events, and the finish line individuals come in and they fit these shoes perfectly to the athlete's individual foot, because a lot of them have those foot problems where flat arches, extra wide or longer feet, just all of those things that make it difficult for them to find comfortable shoes to participate in. That's just some of the simple things that we try to provide for them, because they have enough going on already. The least that we can try to do is bring it to them in one spot, and they can just bounce from tent to tent, checking off all the boxes.
Which is such a good idea, this whole setup with the wellness challenges and screening. What a great idea. They're there for the sports, but, you know, let's kill two birds with one stone and get them in, get them screened, get them taken care of. And it is hard. What if somebody has a child, and I've heard this a couple of times, I'd love to do Special Olympics, but I can't afford it.
Well, I wish that they would just call me, because Special Olympics is 100% free. We're a nonprofit organization. We rely solely on donations and sponsorships from the community. We ask nothing from our coaches, our families, or our athletes.
That is such a big issue, and these parents think it's going to cost them money, and they're struggling to begin with, and they're worried about paying that bill. So by being, you guys get those donations. I know we did it. We've raised money for Special Olympics. We did that candy sale where we had $500 worth of candy and we raised $2,000 because everyone was giving us $20 for a lollipop, See's candy thing. And we also raised all the money for uniforms one year for all of volleyball. So we've done a lot of fundraisers with you guys. My question is, we're living in the time of COVID. COVID has shut everything down. And I know it shut you down. How are you supporting your athletes and fulfilling your mission during the pandemic?
So the COVID was really tough in the beginning for everybody. We had to cancel all of our events, competitions. My biggest Polar Plunge fundraiser of the year got canceled 2 days before the event last year.
Oh my gosh.
It was, but we still made our goal. Everybody was still generous and donated, and we still got to do that, just didn't have the party in the event. But what we did at Special Olympics is we went right to work on how we could do things from home. We offered multiple virtual events, competitions where athletes were still able to participate. We provided them the equipment to their home, and then they competed in the competitions all through online, or if they didn't have access to internet or a computer, we sent everything to them in the mail, printed out, and they sent us their competition scores at the end of it, and we still were able to provide them with that state medal.
That is just awesome. I was so worried about that so many kids, all they have is Special Olympics. I work with kids every day at Skills Academy where, you know, they just talk about Special Olympics all the time. And we were so sad to see that go.
It was heartbreaking, but our community is very susceptible to infection and illnesses, and we just needed to do what was safest for them while still offering something from home. As the year progressed, we have slowly been able to move back into in-person practices and competitions. I just scheduled my first track and field competition for next month, and I am so excited. I feel out of practice. It's been a year, but I cannot wait to see everybody's faces, even if it's behind a mask.
You're listening to Randy Van Ness at Special Needs Connection. I'm Randy Van Ness from Skills Academy, and I'm talking to Tasha Noble from Special Olympics. We're talking about how Special Olympics survived COVID, how parents can get involved with Special Olympics, that there's no charge for them to do Special Olympics, and how it really helps grow our kids. I know at Skills Academy, when one of our kids have a sport, everybody shows up for it. They show up for football, basketball, volleyball, and all cheer each other along. We try and do that really big sense of community, that everybody's out there doing what they need to reach out to others. Do you see that with a lot of groups coming and cheering on members and players and stuff?
Yes, there are many volunteer groups, many group homes. Everybody just wants to see our athletes succeed. And the best ones are the volunteer groups that are there from the beginning of the season to the end of the season, and just seeing these athletes strive to accomplish a goal and then actually reach it. The smiles are the biggest why that I get on why people participate, is just the love and the smiles and the joy that they get from seeing our athletes participate.
So somebody has somebody in their house and they want to participate. I hear this a lot. Oh, my child used to do Special Olympics at our last base, but we don't know who to contact here. How do they get hold of you? That's our starting point. How do they get hold of you?
Yes, right here in the Southeast region. My office is right here in Colorado Springs. I am available by email or phone. Email is T as in Tasha, Noble, N-O-B as in boy, L-E, at specialolympicsco.org. Or you can reach me by phone, 719-574-8480.
And again, for my listeners, if you cannot find Tasha or you have any questions, you know, you can always call me at Skills Academy, Randy at Skills Academy, 719-722-5551, and we can get you hooked up with Special Olympics, especially now. We get to talk a bit about Skills Academy, as I've talked about before, is moving to the CTU campus, the old Colorado Tech campus, and we have offered Special Olympics some space in our office because we have so many special needs adults who are in and out getting different services, not only from Skills Academy, but different partners like Abilities, Connection, and people like that, where our guys come in and they're looking for other help, and by able to offer you guys space, we're going to be able to do so much where we can get athletes the help they want and the involvement they want by working with your team, Tasha, at your office and our office and working it together. What a great way to have a one-stop shop to get everybody through the door and get signed up for Special Olympics.
Yes, we cannot wait, and especially because you guys really work with our transition community, going from high school into the college or working fields, and they don't have the guidance that they once had. All they have to do is just come down the hall now. And I can't wait to prop open my door and just welcome them all in.
Another thing that's important is donating. Just, you know, a simple $50 check once in a while, or like we do once a month where we donate automatically $20 a month to Special Olympics. Special Olympics is tax-free, correct?
Yes.
And a lot of the people, like my husband who works for UCCS, they get matching. When they donate, their school matches and donates. So, you know, it might be $20 a month, but you put that with my husband's matching donation. Now we're at $40 a month. Put 10 of those together, now we're covering all kinds of expenses. How do people make donations? Do they go through the WARC? Do they go through United Way? Do they go through what?
There are many different avenues. Something as simple as just calling me and saying, hey, Tasha, I'd like to make a donation, and I can take either cash, check, or card through our website, www.specialolympicsco.org. Checking through your companies if they do have matches or the United Way. Just really looking at the different avenues that you have and just asking the question, if I did this, will someone help me? And either I will or your business, it just takes that one little question.
Which is a big question. How can I help? Call Tasha. Call her and say, hey, I might want to become a volunteer. I might want to be a coach. You might have a kid that wants to be an athlete. I have three now playing volleyball. So one's a peer partner and the other two are players. We have two that play softball. One of the things that I see a lot is the volunteers. I see the Police Officer Association. I see, what are some of the groups that volunteer regularly with you?
Well, you mentioned the law enforcement. Law enforcement is our biggest supporters, hands down. The Sheriff's Office as well as local police departments. They are not only our biggest supporters, but also our biggest fundraising assets. They are worldwide supporting Special Olympics. We have group volunteers come in from businesses, Lockheed Martin, Team Home Select, some of the home programs, they come in and volunteer. The bases, the militaries, through the even the United States Air Force Academy.
Yeah, I've seen the cadets at many an event, and we did that big track and field up there, too.
Yes, the Air Force Academy is actually where we host our state summer games. So they let us come in and use their facilities, and they put on a nice big show for us, and everybody comes out to help and volunteer.
See, that's just great that we bring all these groups together in our community all to support these athletes. It's so important. Talk to me about Polar Plunge. This is our big event, and I know you must be going crazy because we're 3 weeks out.
Yes, it is. It is crunch time now. Yes, very excited this year because we actually get to have it. This year, more than ever, though, we do need the help of our community to keep sports and competitions going on for our athletes right here in the Southeast region. This is our largest fundraiser of the year. This year's goal is $50,000. This will pave the way for 2021 and 2022's sports competitions. You can sign up for a team. You can join a team. There are special prices for our athletes for them to come in and participate and actually let the community meet them, let them see where these donations are going back to. We have a pre-plunge plaza where our vendors who have sponsored us, Skills Academy being one of them, will get to let people see the services that they provide as well as know that they are partners with Special Olympics. And then you spin this year a roulette wheel, no open body of water this year. It is a roulette wheel for one of the five following options: cold water bucket, warm water bucket, a foam machine that's going to create a wall of bubbles, and my super soaker squad. The fifth option is dealer's choice. If you're lucky enough to land on this one, you get to pick which one of those four options you participate in. New this year is a 5K we are offering right on property at the UC Health Park. So if you think of the Sky Sox Stadium, where the Vibes play baseball, it'll all be taking place right there. And once the 5K and your plunging is done, you can head on over to the parking lot right next to it, and that's where we're having our after party. We've got axe throwing, free beer for ages 21 and up participants, as well as multiple food trucks. So lots to come and enjoy, come and support, and mainly get to see what it is that we're about.
I love Polar Plunge. I did the plunge 2 years ago. We all dressed in Hawaiian shirts and hula skirts and dove in that freezing cold lake, and we raised like $3,000 as a team. So I love Polar Plunge. Tasha, can you repeat what date, what time, and where?
Absolutely. So it is Saturday, April 24th at UC Health Park. There's many names to it. Sky Sox Stadium, Vibes Baseball, all the things. The address is 4385 Tutt Boulevard right here in Colorado Springs. 5K registration sign-in starts at 7:15. 5K kicks off at 8. Plunge registration starts at 8:30. Plunging starts at 9. Once you sign up, you'll start receiving emails from me on when to sign up for your plunge times. This year, because of COVID, not everybody can show up at once, so we do have to have those times where you sign up and come in at your scheduled.
Perfect. So again, people can go to Special Olympics with an S, co.org, get signed up, put together a team, have fun with it, and come plunge with Special Olympics and raise money for our athletes. This is a once a year event that really helps bring out the community, really helps to show all the support we can do for these athletes and help this community move forward with sports and return from the COVID close down. We've had Tasha Noble from Special Olympics, Southeast Region, with us today talking about Polar Plunge and all the things you can do with Special Olympics. Tasha, can you give your phone number one last time so if anybody wants to reach out to you?
Sure, is area code 719-574-8480.
I thank you for coming, Tasha. This has been great, great information. I want to see everybody's face out at Polar Plunge. We will be there, Skills Academy. We even have a team of teachers and students who will be plunging. So we're really excited about it. Thank you, Tasha, so much.
Thank you for having me.
This is Randy at Special Needs Connections. We'll be right back. This segment of Special Needs Connection is being brought to you by European Nails. I cannot say enough about Tony and Christina at European Nails. They are very caring towards our special needs family members, and some special needs adults really have trouble taking care of their fingers and toenails. Men and women will both benefit by having their nail care done by European Nails. Call Tony and Christina at European Nails at 719-532-9999 or go by European Nails. They're open 7 days a week at 1735 Briargate Boulevard, right across from the Chapel Hills Mall. This is Randy Van Ness with Special Needs Connection. Welcome back. I'm from Skills Academy, and today we have a wonderful guest for you. We have Will Romero from the Pikes Peak ARC. Morning, Will. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Randy. Thanks for having me.
So the community hears about ARC all the time, the ARC Thrift Store. Can you explain the connection between the ARC Pikes Peak region and the ARC Thrift Store?
Yeah, I sure can, and thanks for asking that question, because you know, it's a good problem if it's a problem at all. But the ARC Thrift Stores in the ARC Pikes Peak region are one of each other. The ARC Thrift Stores were actually developed for the purpose of supporting the ARC chapter, and that's with what I do with the ARC Pikes Peak region. The thrift stores are our main funding base. The shopping, the donations, those things help us provide the services that we provide here in the Pikes Peak region, which includes El Paso, Park, and Teller counties, with the services that we provide at no cost or a very reduced cost. But we're very thankful for our ARC Thrift Store, so we want to encourage people to continue to donate, continue to shop, so that we could do the work that we need to do at the chapter level.
That's awesome. So Sure. Let's go through some of the services you do offer here.
Sure. You know, first and foremost, the ARC was established in 1955, when at a time it was encouraged, if you had a child with a disability, to take your child to the institution, leave them at the institution, turn around and live your life like you never had a child with a disability. In 1955, our mayor and former city councilman oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to forget his first name off the top of my head, but Peggy Marshall and her husband, again, I apologize for forgetting his name, but they had Alan Marshall, who is still a member of the ARC Pikes Peak region as a child with a disability, and they truly believed that their child could live successfully in the community with the right supports, with the right belief, and the trust into the community that they would help raise this child when in need, just like a typical developing child was case. So in 1955, the ARCs were established to promote the civil rights of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So that's our first and our foremost responsibility with our mission, is assure that those civil rights are being met. So we do a lot of work in the public policy arena. We do that here at the local level, at the state level, and at the federal level. And we just make sure that individuals and loved ones with individuals with disabilities have a voice, especially when it comes to public policy. We're often the target group that gets our budgets cut, and very rarely do you see more funding going into disabilities. So we make it a very important part of our mission to make sure that that voice is being heard. The other areas of advocacy that we provide is advocacy in the schools to make sure that our kids are getting that free and appropriate education that they're promised to receive. We work with making sure that families are comfortable with their IEPs. We are one, and that I know of right now, Randy, one agency that provides actually an advocate to go to the IEP meeting with the parent and with the child to help advocate for that child in general. So we're very proud of that.
That's very important, and that's something where you and I can tie in together. We do the 18 and above. If you guys take the 18 and below, man, that would be wonderful. I get those calls every day from parents about, can somebody come in on an IEP with them?
Mm-hmm.
Now I know where to send them. Thank you.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, and that's definitely an area that we see a lot more requests is at the elementary school level. So we want to encourage families to come in and visit with the ARC early on in the diagnosis or early on in the IEP process, so we can help them with developing a realistic IEP for them in the schools, and also to begin that future planning process, because you know as well as I know an IEP isn't going to be the same in elementary school as it is in middle school or junior or high school, mm-hmm. and into that transitional period. So it's something that always is changing, but it's a lot easier to guide a family and a child, a student, if you are familiar with them already. More often than not, we handle crisis situations, and we're really trying to get to a point where we have opportunities to really get to know the families, get to know the student, so that, again, we're giving good, solid advice for that individual, because we all need different supports in different areas.
Oh, gosh, yes. And where were you when my kids were little? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I became the IEP queen, going to four IEPs a year.
Right.
And the one time my husband filled in, he signed away my kids' right to speech and physical therapy.
Wow.
Yeah. We never allowed him to go to an IEP meeting after that. So
right.
If you have a spouse who's going to sign away rights, don't let them go to the IEP meetings.
Yeah. Make sure that you understand what the IEP meeting is about. Make sure you understand why there are 15 school professionals and one parent there in the classroom or in the meeting usually. You know, there's a lot to be prepared for. In line with the advocacy, just because we're on this topic, one other area that we do provide is education for our parents in the IEP process. Now, we are, much like what you're trying to do, Randy, is build this network of support and getting information out to our families so that it's concrete information and valuable for them. But we're partnering with like Peak Parent Center to provide more opportunities for parents to get IEP training without duplicating our services and working together to offer that training more frequently throughout the school year and even into through the summer months, because again, those needs, educational needs, still need to be focused on in the summer just as much as we are September through May. So we want to continue to focus that and work with our parents on that. So again, if there's things that we could do together to strengthen our parents and the IEP process, we want to do that. Number for you to remember, in our community to remember, there are over 17,000 kids on an IEP or a 504 in the Pikes Peak region area. The ARC of the Pikes Peak region has approximately three educational advocates that work in the community to do that. So there's a lot of demand for those advocates to go out and work for the schools or work with them when dealing with the schools. So this is why it's important for us to empower the parents to be that primary educator of their child, to really get familiar with the IEP process so that they know what they want, what their child should be getting, and not leaving it up to just the educational institution to make the decisions for that parent, like signing away rights, stuff like that.
Yes, very embarrassing. He was the colonel of the face and he did that.
Yeah.
But it sounds like there's so much that interplay where we could really work together, because we get these parents who are new here with the military.
Right.
We don't see them till their kids in their senior year of high school. That's when parents come to us, mm-hmm. because we do the transition programs and stuff like that. So getting them to you ahead of time, right away, and I think most of my listeners will agree, getting, maybe setting up a twice a year training where we bring in your staff to train these parents with the different school districts, working with the different school districts, right. would be a great idea.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
Together.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. And I actually had reached out to District 11, had a meeting with their transitional team, and just, you know, explaining, we want to try and help eliminate what is called, in my world, the cliff. Are you familiar with that cliff?
No, tell me about it. Tell my listeners.
The cliff to the ARC, and a lot around the disability community, is that period in time when a student transitions from the public school system into the adult system. Sadly, 40 to 50% of our kids who transition out of the public school system fail to live successfully in their communities, and that is the big cliff. They fall off the cliff, and there are a lot of reasons why that happens. The thing that I think we need to do as a community, and why I hope that all of our workings together and collaborations would do, is create opportunities for these young men and women who are transitioning into the community and not finding the right avenue. Some are placed in an inappropriate day program where they would rather be in a community working and doing things, but our school system to some degree has said, your path is to a day program, or your path is to guardianship.
Which is
We believe that your path should be to employment. Your path should be to higher education. Your path should be to living in the community. I think you know as well as I know, even typically developing students aren't ready for the real world when transitioning out of high school.
No,
and we expect that from our folks that are and I say have varying abilities, because I'm not really into the dis part. I'm into we just need to provide those right supports. Mm-hmm. That's what we need to do a better job of, we being the community, is providing that additional support for when those students transition out of the public school system, there is still some people in their lives that they can rely on that can help guide them to get them to a point where they are employable, where they are involved in the community with other things, who are living successfully because they have affordable housing, you know, all of those things that we dream about for our typically developing kids. We should be dreaming that same thing for our kids with these varying abilities. I think you have been blown away by the talents our kids have just as much as I have over the past 10 years. And our community just doesn't see that. So that's what we're trying to do, is provide that additional support for these individuals as they transition out of high school, to give them more time to become independent and to learn how to live independently. Along with that cliff of not living successfully after high school, many end up on a couch because they don't know where to go, so they're watching TV. I mentioned an 85% unemployment rate. You know that, unfortunately, for a lot of our young adults coming out of these programs, when you have an 85% unemployment rate, they end up in our public jails. Unfortunately, today, most of our beds in the jails and in our institutions are filled by individuals with intellectual or developmental disabilities who tend to end up in jail for very petty reasons, whose offenses tend to build more and more when they're in jail, which causes more time being incarcerated. It is averaged at the arc of the Pikes Peak region saves our community anywhere from $2 to $3 million a year by keeping individuals with disabilities out of jail that don't belong in jail. Now we're doing this because our kids aren't given an opportunity once they transition out, and we need to change that. That's where I working together is so important.
Exactly. This is Randy Van Ness with Special Needs Connection. I'm Randy Van Ness from Skills Academy. We're talking with Will Romero from the ARC. We're going to touch on something he brought up, this transitions period. As you know, with Skills, we brought in the Restaurant Association and started a whole vocational program.
Nice.
We are the first vocational program in the nation for special needs adults, where it ends in an internship, an apprenticeship, and full employment.
Beautiful.
How do we, as an organization, partner with you to get the word out, to stop this cliff? Because that's where I was. I was the mom of a special needs kid who left high school. They stuck him in a day program that was not appropriate at all for him. How do you work with organizations like mine on outreach so these people know? Like, we're doing a summer school program for these kids on IEPs to get them, the parents, the information that they need. It gets their kids doing something during the summer instead of just sitting around.
Yeah.
And it gives us a chance to get them the information. How could we partner with you on these parents? I mean, we're talking so far in 1 week of being open, we've got 60 signups.
Well, I can believe it. You know, I think just like me, there's a lot of people that are anxious to get out right now. And, you know, COVID, as much as it impacted the general population, it really had an impact on the disability population because of more isolation. And, you know, isolation is one of the number one killers of individuals with disabilities. It outweighs smoking and cancer and things like that. It's isolation and loneliness. So I can only imagine, and it's the same with us, that there are individuals out there that are anxious to get out and to get back into the community. And you know, Randy, that's a good question that you ask. How do we partner together and making this thing happen for our disability community? Because I firmly believe that as a disability service provider, we all are touching the lives of the same individuals over and over again, but we have different roles that we play in their lives and things like that. And I think we get so overwhelmed by all of the other day-to-day needs that we're dealing with there, we forget about the importance of that collaboration and getting together and saying, what does your calendar look like and what does mine look like, and how can we get individuals that you're serving to an event that the ARC is sponsoring? What are you doing that we don't need to do so that we're not duplicating services and we put our resources and efforts into these other areas that are lacking? You know, because I try to say, you know, the needs in the disability community, if I could touch my elbows together reaching backwards, that's how big it really is, and it's hard to focus all on one on everything. But I think it's doing things like what you're doing now, getting a better understanding of what each of these agencies are doing. How do we... I get a little bit frustrated. We go through a lot of efforts and hosting activities and really wanting to serve the disability community, and then you get very little attendance. And you wonder, what happens to this distribution of information once it leaves your and I's plate? You know,
right, exactly.
Are we doing a good job as executives or as leaders of the organizations making sure that our information is getting out to our population, or do we get it and say, okay, good, you know, I guess I'm glad the ARC is doing that, or I'm glad Skills Academy is doing it, and we don't share it. Mm-hmm. And we got to get better at sharing each other's information and making sure that it's as important to me as it is to you when we get that stuff. And I think sometimes we get, lack of a better word, we get lazy and we forget to pass on the information because we're so, again, involved with what we're doing ourselves. Mm-hmm. So what I hope that we could do with the ARC is take your information, have it shared at our agency, running through our screens once we get our lobbies open again, so people mm-hmm. are seeing what's happening there and they know that we're in this together. It isn't the ARC versus or Skills Academy versus, you know,
this
thing.
Thank you. I hate that.
No, it's about us working together.
Lift up the community.
Yeah.
Exactly. Lift up the community. You know, we've built this insane list, and that's why the radio show has worked so well. Our email list is up to about 5,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great list for the community.
Yeah, sure is.
We've done information nights with the ARC before. We've mm-hmm. done it with competitors like Dungarvan because they had some new information to pass
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
We got to quit looking at, you know, this is my little pot and this is your little pot. Let's do merge the pots and do something big together.
Yeah, you know, what I always look at it is there are options for our parents. You know, that, you know, it doesn't have to be this one over another. It's, you have options to choose one. What fits your situation better? What agency is going to meet your needs better? It's not, this is the best one, this is the worst one. Let's work together to make us all better. You know,
exactly.
And I think, again, that's that collaboration together, being able to share our resources together, get the word out about the information that's going on. You know, as I was mentioning, the things that we focus on, you know, is advocacy is a big piece of it, the guardianship, the part that we play for 86 individuals. But, you know, one of the biggest things that we do for our community that is even more valuable than the IEP meetings and all that is socialization opportunities.
Oh, God, so
the ARC
important.
Dances,
that's how we
right?
know each other.
Right, yeah.
We've met each other through the ARC dances. Will and his family took over at the ARC, and my special needs sons and daughter have gone to all the ARC events over the years. They always go to some ARC dance. Mom, what's the dance this coming up? What's the dance? Constantly. And that is social opportunities.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that really hits this community is lack of social opportunities.
That is, and actually, as we have taken the silver lining out of this COVID and said, how do we redevelop ourselves to really, again, meet the needs of the community and see the importance of what we're doing? And again, a big part of that to me is collaboration with us to create social opportunities for our families to get out there and be part of the community. Right now, we're planning, and it's in the planning phases, but we're planning 6 events over the summertime.
Oh, awesome.
For our varying ability community to come out and be part of and just enjoy, you know, what the ARC has to offer in this, making it affordable, making it a quality event, making it where, again, it's accessible, all of those things that are so important to the families that we serve. You know, we are located right by Memorial Park,
mm-hmm.
so we have an opportunity to do some cool things outdoors. We've just completed a $2.5 million building renovation. We're actually in phase 3. We're doing the landscaping. But the purpose behind our building renovation, it's a project called Building for Change. It's changing the culture a lot like what we seems to what you're doing with your kitchen, working with the restaurant businesses and helping our folks find employment opportunities. That's what we're hoping that we're able to do with our campus, is reach those that might not be enrolled in a program already or don't have the finances to pay for a program, but helping them so that they still have that opportunity to be part of the community. But again, if we throw these events for our community and you only get one or two people there, it zaps the energy out of the staff. It zaps,
everybody,
you know, the excitement out of it. So, you know, I won't rely on Skills Academy to help us promote these events, to get people there so that they can, again, get to know each other, to get to know us get to know them, pointing them out and, you know, to the areas that's best going to serve their needs. And, again, for me, building relationships, because it's hard to speak intelligently about a family situation when you just know them over the phone for maybe a 20-minute conversation. You know, yep. That makes it really difficult. So we want to build these lasting relationships from the day of diagnosis until it's our time to pass. We want to be there. And, you know, the ARC has been here for 65 years, and we plan on being here another 65 years. We're not going nowhere.
That's so awesome. That is just so awesome. Are you going to be doing a grand opening for that new campus of yours?
We are. We hope. And, again, you know, we keep our fingers crossed with everything because we want it to be when the community can come out and help us celebrate. But we, fingers crossed, maybe in July.
Okay.
And we're able to do that. And, you know, again, the beautiful thing about our campus, I'll tell you just a few things that we have in there. We have a state-of-the-art conference room where we can host up to 80 individuals on chairs, state-of-the-art accessibility, so forth. We got a looping system in the building, so if there's individuals with hearing impairments, they'll be able to come into the building and have the highest tech technology available for the hearing impaired in our facility now. And that is available to our community to use, especially if you're a disability community and you want to do training education-wise, that's available. Next door is what we call the Personal Development Center. We have a computer lab, and the purpose of the computer lab is really to help individuals learn to navigate the application process through technology. Because I'll date myself a little bit, Randy, you're probably not as old as I was, but back in my day, you used to be able to go in and ask them if they're taking applications and fill out an application and leave it.
I remember.
Well, that's no longer the case, you know.
Everything
about
online.
Yeah, I'd have to say 99% of our employers, it's an online application. And if you don't know how or you can't access a computer to fill out an application, you're not going to get an interview. So that's really the purpose behind that, and to build skills of the individuals when it's coming to use computers. We'll also have a library, and I think this is important for us and really reaching our families. But we're in the middle of working with TRE in a partnership to create a family resource library where families can come out and check out equipment, get a chance to use it before they purchase it, you know, all these cool things so that you're not wasting your money or you have an opportunity to see if it really meets your needs there. But we'll also focus in that library on criminal justice and disabilities, and you know, again, all of the reasons why that's
again,
there.
Again, yes, we know that one, unfortunately.
Yeah. And then we'll have a multi-purpose room, arts, crafts, dancing, doing, you know, whatever you want to make a mess, you can make a mess in that room, and we're able to clean it up. And then last but not least, really the big piece of the Personal Development Center is we do have a working kitchen where you can have an instructor working on a stove and up to four other individuals working on their own stoves. These stoves do adjust, so if there's an accessibility issue, it could go up, it could go down, so forth. We're building that in there. We're going to have an adult changing table in that facility, which is one of very very few in the downtown area. So when we voice those concerns, these are some of the things we need to do if our community is truly going to be inclusive.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So it has those kind of things there available, washer and dryers to teach those, again, independent skills. And then we hope to gradually make it a smart building by adding the technology to it, like, hey, Siri, turn on the lights, turn on the AC, you know,
yep.
All of those fancy things, because technology is an avenue to independence, right?
Yes, it is.
So we could get those, how to use that technology and sample that technology in our building, then an individual at home can say, this is what I need in my home, or a family would feel more comfortable with using that technology because they can use it on site at our campus. So all of that is available to our disability community at no cost or very minimal cost. Our goal, just like what you're trying to do, is make things available for our population, mm-hmm. not just individuals we serve, but individuals you serve, individuals that Special Olympics serves, the individuals that, you know, TRE is serving all through that this is definitely a community where they're welcomed, and again, we're going to be here for them. Start developing those relationships.
And Will, it's just so important, these relationships. I can see so many different avenues that we have, you know, that we can use together and we can do together. We have jobs. Oh my gosh, we
yeah.
have jobs for people.
Yeah.
We just need to get them trained up. We have 73 different restaurants
nice.
Came out and said they will hire our people once they go through our program.
Beautiful.
So jobs are not an issue. That's why mm-hmm. one of the reasons we set this up is the underemployment in the special needs community is just criminal.
Yeah, yeah.
So working together with your teachers, your instructors, we can give them the culinary training they need for your guys.
Exactly.
Basically, the biggest thing is this outreach to the community, letting parents know. I get just so many calls of parents crying, help me, please.
Yeah.
And you must get them, too,
oh, yeah.
every single day.
Yeah.
So being able to say, hey, the ARC's much better for in this area than me, or hey, we're better in this area than them, that's where we need to be working
exactly.
together and,
yeah.
and really referring people back and forth. We specialize in transitions. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
The younger kids we don't touch, and having somebody where we can send these younger kids, because, you know, right now we just don't have that.
Right. And I think, you know, again, it's empowering the parents in the early stages of the diagnosis, the early stages of these school years experiences. I hate to say it, but I, you know, in the 10 years experience that I have just seen the energy of our parents zapped out by the time they're, you know, in fifth grade or so. So homeschooling or, you know, remote learning now is the only option that they feel they have available for them. And they go to that. And I'll be honest with you, you know, I try to do e-learning with my grandson.
Oh, no.
Thought I'm very patient. I'll get this thing. He's in kindergarten. I am not an e-learning teacher. I have found that out.
Yeah.
And I knew that, though, because when my daughter would come home with homework, me and her would just, you know, we butt heads, and it was difficult. Not all of us are educational teachers, right?
Nope, definitely not.
And so I think it's important, if you're going to homeschool your student, then you need to have those skills to do homeschooling. So can we help you with learning those skills to, you know, to
awesome.
Benefit your student, you know, doing all of those types of things. But parents, we got to do a better job at having confidence in our kids' abilities and knowing that you can guide them through the system, but it takes future planning and it takes working together with all of us.
I agree.
To get to the right point.
And I see just so much synergy. Thank you so much on coming in here, Will.
Sure.
If somebody needs to reach you, do you want to give them your address and your phone number or your website out?
Yeah, sure. Again, and thank you, Randy, for having me. If you'd
no
like
problem.
To reach out to the ARC, our phone number is 719-471-4800. It is all of the press this number, press that number to get to the right person that you want. If you want to speak to me directly, I'm an extension 111. I'd be more than happy to talk to you and direct you to the right person otherwise there. Or you could go to our website at www.thearc, and that's TheArc, Pikes Peak Region, PPR.org. So the ARC, PPR.org would be our website. You can fill out a questionnaire there if you'd like to speak to an advocate, so forth. Or as things begin to open up, come by and visit us at our campus located at 10 North Meade Avenue, right across the street from Memorial Park. You can't miss our new signs that we have on our building, and we're really excited about doing that and partnering with you, Randy, and our community. I think we could do a lot together.
I think we can, too. Thank you so much for coming out and talking with us, and we're going to have you back and plan some events together so we can let our listeners know. This has been Randy Van Ness with Special Needs Connection. Again, if you have any questions about our show or if you need help finding the services in the right place in the right agency, give us a call at 719-722-5551. That's 719-722-5551. We will be talking to you next week. Thank you.
Be sure to tune in to the Special Needs Connection every Sunday at 10 a.m. here on KPPF, 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM. The power of information.